Hello and welcome to the Healthy Lifestyle Show. I'm your host, Dr. Dia Lanier, and today we'll be discussing nutrition and fitness in the news. Now, before I begin, I want to let you know that this is the last show I'll be doing for a while. I'm currently working on several projects, and I'll definitely keep you posted on all of them. But if you want to continue to receive weekly doses of information, inspiration, and motivation as you go on your journey towards health and wellness, and those will include nutrition and fitness tips, please tune in to my weekly blog at wordsofwellness.typepad.com. And spelled out, that's www.wordsofwellness.typepad.com. You can also get updates as well as sign up for our newsletter on my website, which is www.drdialanier.com. So moving right along. Oh, and before I even move along, though, I do want to say that it has been a pleasure to do this show, the Healthy Lifestyle Show, on Blog Talk Radio. I've really enjoyed coming to you, and I hope you found the information that I've provided interesting as well as valuable, and hopefully you can use that and put the tips and topics to use in your everyday life. As I mentioned, the shows are archived, so if there's anything that you've missed or as you go through the months of the show and see something interesting that you might like to share, you can suggest it to someone, and you can also check it out whenever it's convenient for you because they are all archived. So now I will move along to talk about nutrition and fitness in the news. And my first story today is talking about snacks. Now, my children actually start back to school this Monday on the 24th. And so there are a couple of interesting topics in the news about school, both fitness and nutrition in the schools. And this first story talks about how a Senate committee recommends that the USDA, which is the U.S. Department of Agriculture, oversee snacks that are sold in the schools. So there's actually the Senate Agriculture Committee that has recommended that the USDA really be the one to oversee all of the food items that are sold in schools. Now, currently, the USDA regulates the contents of school lunches, so the things that are actually in the lunch line for lunch, and it does prohibit the sale of foods with minimal nutritional value, such as soda and things of that nature. But it doesn't extend to foods that are sold in vending machines in the schools. Also, it doesn't include things like the a la carte sales or things that are sold in school stores. So lawmakers are thinking that the USDA oversight of all food items that are sold in schools will help to ensure that food sales don't undermine the school's nutrition programs that they have in place. As you can imagine, you want to have healthy school lunches, but if you have things that are a la carte or vending machines, that may encourage students to buy things there as opposed to things that are going to be a little bit healthier for them. So the Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman, Tom Harkins, said that he wanted to include the recommendation for a new legislation that will reauthorize the National School Lunch Program, and hopefully they'll start working on that this year. The thing that is good about it is through the Obama administration, they have proposed a $1 billion per year increase in child nutrition programs, but we don't have a lot of details on how the money should be used, and I think it's going to be helpful for the schools to specify as much as possible what that should be used for. As a matter of fact, there's another story that's a little bit related to that. So it's important for us to have healthy food, meals, as well as snacks in the schools. But a big problem, is that the budgets are very tight in schools, and especially in the National School Lunch Program. A lot of schools are vulnerable to serving low-cost, unhealthy foods to students. And this story is actually out of the Columbus Dispatch. The prior story that I was just talking about was from the Long Island Newsday. But in Columbus, a problem, and I think that is around the nation, that schools wind up serving low-cost foods that are not the healthiest just because of budget constraints. And currently, the nutrition rules for the U.S. Department of Agriculture requires that schools provide a certain number of food items from each of the food groups. So things like breads, fruits, vegetables, meat, the milk and dairy group, they'll recommend a certain number of items from each of those, but they don't really give guidance after that regarding the nutrition content of those foods as well as how they should be prepared. So, you know, having something baked is going to be better than having something fried, and then that all has to work with the school's budget as well as how they're able to get the food to the students as expeditiously as possible. So, for example, you may have a rule that you need to have at least 2 servings of fruits and vegetables to be served at each meal, but often the cost of that will dictate that you know that need be met by either frozen or canned varieties as opposed to something that's fresh. Was a school in this area of Columbus, called the Southwestern School District, that actually has taken it up a notch, and they have served ultra-grain items as well as reduced-fat macaroni and cheese, and they swapped out those little mini corn dogs for turkey dogs, which are a little bit healthier. And they also are one of the handful of school districts in the state of Ohio that participate in the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program, which is a program that aims to help schools purchase fresh produce, which is, I think, is a wonderful program to have. They have a person working with them who's a chef and food systems consultant that really argues that you're able to have a small budget but still provide meals that are healthy, and that shouldn't affect the school's bottom line. And so hopefully we can see more of that in schools all over the place instead of just in this area. So I think that's a great idea. Another news story that is out of the Chicago Tribune talks about food labeling systems, how they can be confusing and sometimes misleading to different consumers. Now, we actually had a story on food labels in general, but also, you know, at the point of purchase. So if you're in a restaurant having nutrition facts on the menu, we did a show about that not too long ago. But this is talking specifically about nutrition labels on products found in grocery stores. And a lot of times those are very helpful in general. You help the people who are buying the items make healthy food choices. However, there are at least 5 major grocery chains who are introducing or in the process of introducing food rating systems. One example that's given in this article is the Nuval system, which assigns a score between 1 and 100 based on nutrition value. And there's also the Nutrition IQ program, which is supposed to come out this fall, which uses a color-coded system to highlight nutrition content. Now, although these programs have been designed to help consumers make healthier choices, some critics of them are saying that adding labels already onto items that have, you know, a bunch of markings and icons already can be a little bit confusing to consumers in general. So, for example, right now there's the heart check mark of the American Heart Association that you see on several products. Actually, there's more than 800 products that contain high fiber or whole grain. And then individual products like Kraft Foods, PepsiCo, Kellogg Company, General Mills, and Unilever also use their own icons to indicate healthy food choices. So, you know, I think the problem or the concern is that if you have a lot of other things on there, on the box or the packaging, how it can become very confusing. Some of those food rating systems identify the healthiest food choices within a category, so they would include something like cookies and other snack foods, as well as candy and ice cream. Like, out of these, the best would be this one. And then others don't even include those snack foods like that. So there are actually was a study found in the journal Appetite that showed that consumers are more likely to trust nutrition symbols that are endorsed by third parties like health organizations. So, for example, the Healthy Heart Check by the American Heart Association. But on the flip side of that, the American Heart Association's Heart Check Mark program has been criticized because it charges food manufacturers annual fees between $3,000 and $7,500 just to participate in their program. So that's been a criticism of theirs. In addition to that, the American Diabetes Association has been deciding recently to scale back from its food nutrition rating system. There are critics that claim that it endorsed unhealthy foods, including several sugary cereals, and so they step back a little bit from doing that. So I think if you get too many labels in there, it really can get out of control and, you know, become visual clutter as you're going through the aisle. You can't keep track of all of that. A lot of us have we stick with the brand that we like, but I think a few of them can be helpful, and always looking at the nutrition facts on the back or the side, wherever it may be, can help you more than anything if you know what to look for in terms of calories, fat content, sugar, and vitamins and minerals, depending on what kind of product it is. So that was out of the Chicago Tribune. So that a lot of that has been nutrition. There also was something about fitness in the news, and this was actually a study that was in the July issue of the journal Health Psychology, which pointed out that parents that have a positive outlook on team sports have more active children, and that's what they found in their study. So children are more likely to be physically active if their parents enjoy and encourage participation in team sports. And what they did to get that information is they gave a survey to 680 parents of fourth and fifth graders, so they look kind of in the higher elementary range from schools, and this was done in Houston by researchers from Baylor College of Medicine as well as Duke University. And they determined that parents who conveyed the importance of not just team sports but high-intensity team sports to their children had children who were more physically active and spent less time watching television. But they found that it's not just team sports. If parents endorse team sports as well as individual activities like running or cycling or swimming, that wound up increasing activity in boys, the level of physical activity in boys, but not necessarily in girls, which was something interesting that they discovered. Of note, they did point out that they included household chores in that. And so they found an interesting fact that parents' attitudes toward household chores, which were included as physical activity, had uninspected influences on the children's attitudes and activity levels, according to the researchers. And specifically, participation in household chores, such as doing laundry or cleaning, was associated with a decrease in sports participation and more TV watching among boys, which is interesting. I don't think that's good news. I do have an 8-year-old son myself, and so I don't want, you know, oh, if you help out with something, all of a sudden you're, you know, going into couch potato status. But their reasons, this researchers were speculating, was that boys who are kept indoors in order to perform chores have less time for more vigorous outdoor play. And so that may be the reason that they came out with that result specifically towards boys. But I think as with anything, you do a mix. It's fine to have our children learn about doing chores in the house, but encouraging them to be physically active, whether that's in team sports or something more individual, I think is great. And as mentioned, that was from Health Psychology July study that was done. Another interesting story is actually discussing online games. And so this was a study also in July from the Archives of Pediatrics in Adolescent Medicine that suggested that online computer games could be a useful tool to help guide children's dietary choices. Now, I know you're like, oh, Dr. Lena, no, I thought we were trying to get the children off of the computer, and I definitely wholeheartedly agree with that, but they actually found something different, and these were researchers from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., who really wanted to get a look of the impact on online games on children's food choices. And so what they did was conducted a randomized trial among, and it was a low group number, but 30 low-income African-American children ages 9 and 10. And the researchers invited the children to play a Pac-Man-style game that awarded points for selecting healthy foods like orange juice, bananas, apples, and carrots. And then it deducted or took away points for selecting unhealthy foods like soda, potato chips, and candy bars. So now there was a second version of the game that kind of did the opposite, rewarded students for selecting the less healthy foods and then penalized them for selecting the healthier items, and they wanted to get an idea of what effect that would have. Well, at the end of the game, the children were invited to choose their own snack, and 90% of children who played the healthy version of the game selected a healthy snack item compared with just 10% of those who played the unhealthy version. Also, they had a control group, that first selected the snack and then played either version of the game, and 60% of those chose a healthy snack. So the reason why they even wanted to take a look at that is that two-thirds of participants reported that they regularly use the Internet, and 26 of 30 participants listed online games as their preferred activity when they're on the Internet. So the researchers in this study out of Georgetown were suggesting that maybe tapping online games, if the students are doing them, to promote healthy eating choices could be an effective and inexpensive tool to help improve nutrition as well as reduce obesity rates in this group. And so I think that's actually pretty interesting, to be honest. If you are doing and taking some of your time, as I mentioned, the American Academy of Pediatrics does recommend less than 2 hours a day of screen time. And so if some of that time for a student happens to be an online game, I think that that might be a good option, or something where they're being physically active, like a Wii Fit or Wii Sports, or something like that, if they're going to do that and if they can't get outside to play as much. I think that actually probably would be better than watching TV, where they kind of put in advertising and commercials that have you craving things you didn't even think you wanted. By the time you see the commercial, you're like, hey, I have a taste for that. So that might be a better option than that. Also in the news, as I went through, and we actually talked about the trend of obesity in the United States, kind of did an update on how things were going both for adults as well as with childhood obesity in the United States. And I did mention that Mississippi, once again, had the highest level of obesity and child obesity. And so this article actually was from the Associated Press, was looking at, well, what's really going on with that. And so even though they've had a lot of legislative efforts as well as millions of dollars in funding, Mississippi health officials have, continued to fall short on the efforts to get a hold around the childhood obesity rate that has been steadily increasing. And so there was a recent report from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, as well as the Trust for America's Health, that we talked about on the show, but this pointed out that 44.4% of Mississippi children ages 10 to 17 were found to be overweight or obese. And when you look at that, that's a large number of young people. 44.4% is very close to 50%, like almost half. And so that's the highest rate in the nation. And in recent years, lawmakers have passed measures to try to improve the health of the state's children, including a law that required public schools to participate in at least 150 minutes of physical activity. I think that's nationwide. I know we definitely have that here in Florida, as well as measures to try to improve the nutritional value of foods that are sold in the schools. The problem, as we mentioned before, all of these efforts to address overweight children as well as adults have been hindered by the lack of funding. So, you know, that just shows that we can have the desire to do that and even make laws to try to encourage that. But if the funding is not there, in cases like in the schools, it can make things a little bit difficult. So right now, the Mississippi Health Department offers a number of health and wellness programs, but they don't specifically have money dedicated to obesity prevention efforts. And so something that the University of Mississippi Medical Center has noted that every school that the UMC or University of Mississippi Medical Center, they will host programs and projects designed to curtail obesity as well as obesity-related ailments like diabetes, heart disease, and sleep apnea, which is a good thing. And then also the Delta Health Alliance has allotted $125 million in federal funding to address a number of health issues, including diabetes and obesity. So hopefully that can be helpful. And a lot of it, if there's not funding in the schools, you know, that can be a place where parents can actually try to do some of that at home, and hopefully they're getting the information they need to pass that on to their children, as well as a model, healthier eating, as well as exercise and how that can be helpful to you. So hopefully I'll be looking forward to seeing the update, and hopefully we really can kind of curb this trend toward obesity here in the United States. In case you're just joining me, you're listening to the Healthy Lifestyle Show with Dr. Dio Lanier. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. We're talking about nutrition and fitness in the news. And this next story is actually out of California from the Whittier Daily News. And it's talking about how California officials focus obesity prevention efforts on preschool as well as child care facilities. So basically, they looked at evidence that showed that programming to prevent childhood obesity is most effective during early childhood. And so based on that evidence, California health officials are focusing their efforts on preschools and daycare facilities, according to the Whittier Daily News. So a recent report released last month by the California Department of Education and the California Health and Human Services Agency showed that approximately one quarter or 25% of all low-income California children are overweight or obese by the time they reach kindergarten. And acknowledging that efforts to curb obesity must start early, the report outlined four goals that were designed to foster healthy habits among children attending preschool, child care, and after-school programs. So the first of the goals was included strengthening the child and adult care food program to improve meal patterns and feeding styles for the young people. The second was establishing nutrition and physical activity requirements for child care programs, which I understand that most of them do not have for the most part. The third, providing consistent messages to the public about nutrition and physical activity. And the fourth is expanding nutrition and physical activity training in the child school programs. Now, this is actually something or a topic that's very close to my heart because I work I have a client, which is the school board of Alachua County, the Head Start program, where I have worked with them in encouraging nutrition and exercise through an exercise program that I offer, Let's Get Fit and Healthy, with them. But so that's been fun, going to each of different classes and seeing the little kids exercise, and they really love to move around and be active. And then once you get them to try new foods at that age, especially healthier options, then that's something that they can not only learn young and continue through their childhood and adulthood, but they can bring that home to their families. And now I learned this, and let's do this, and this is what I found out in school today. And so it's great to affect them at that young age or try to have an impact then, because it can carry with them. It's a lot harder to change bad habits when kids get older. In the program here, the School Board of Alachua County, they actually have adopted a program, Choosy Kids, and it actually invited me to a conference that they had in Atlanta in January where they were planning to incorporate that in waves. So they have some Head Start programs that are using it and others that are going to continue incorporating that program into the Head Start program, which is, you know, preschool for at-risk children. And I think that is a very important area to get involved with encouraging fitness as well as nutrition. And this is a great way to have the teacher get involved in physical education as well as free play for these young children. And this is the Head Start program that's associated with the public school. But I think that'd be a great thing for you to ask about and inquire about if you have a child who is in preschool or going to a daycare, to just find out, well, you know, what kind of meals are you serving and how active are the children during the day? Do they get a chance to go outside? Are they able to be physically active in the classrooms? And so that's something that actually can be very helpful information for you to find out, as well as for any young person that you may have, because that's the best time to get them when they're young, that is for sure. Okay, there's another study that I have here that's actually from the journal Pediatrics that looked at the fact that parents often aren't as confident as they need to be when they're trying to implement and enforce healthy behavior changes in order to cut down on childhood obesity. What they did was assess how parental confidence influences their efforts to change their child's unhealthy behaviors. And this was done by researchers from Harvard Medical School in Boston. They surveyed parents, and these were of overweight children ages 2 to 12, about how confident they felt in making changes aimed at things like limiting television viewing, reducing consumption of fast food as well as sugar laden beverages, as well as modifying other unhealthy behaviors. And they found that on a scale from 0 to 24, the average parental confidence score was about 13. And so parents were not very confident in their ability to, for example, remove a TV from their child's room if there was one in there, or limit television watching, as well as changing the family's eating patterns in general. And the confidence scores were higher among parents who had a healthy weight themselves, as well as parents who had a college level or higher education, as opposed to those who were overweight or obese. The researchers did note in this study that the parental confidence could be improved if their children's physician or nurse assessed their confidence in making behavior change, as well as looking at their readiness to change. So kind of getting in there and maybe at a well child visit, figuring out, so how ready are you to make these changes? And getting into that a little bit more helped them to build up their confidence in going home and making that change for the family. So I think that is great. And last but not least, Atlanta Children's Hospital launches a website to promote healthy habits, which I think is great. It's designed for parents as well as their children in order to develop a healthy lifestyle. And, for example, the parents can download recipes for low-fat meals to prepare with their children, which will, I think, encourage them to eat the meal that's prepared. And for children and teenagers, they can participate in a variety of health quizzes or perform health experiments. And there's also a cardio log to track physical activity, personalized meal planners, grocery lists, and fitness challenges for the family. So that website actually is on the Healthcare IT News, and they're encouraging families to check that out, Healthcare IT News. So I want to thank you so much for tuning in to the Healthy Lifestyle Show. I just want to remind you that the information presented on this program is for education and motivation purposes only. Please consult your personal physician or other healthcare professional before starting, changing, or discontinuing any treatment. I want to thank you again for tuning in and joining me today. And please stay tuned to The Healthy Lifestyle. I will post updates there and encourage you to check out my blog there as a blog on Blog Talk Radio. And I just really want to thank you for joining me during this time. And remember to be healthy and God bless. Take care.